Good morning, family. My name is Martin, and I'm a grateful alcoholic. First things first, I'd like to thank my higher power, whom I choose to call God, for allowing me to be here. For that, I am grateful. It is an honor, a privilege, and a pleasure to be able to stand here to help celebrate this 80th year anniversary of Alcoholics Anonymous. Please, let's give it a hand. My sobriety date is June 10th, 1988, and my home group is the Spring Creek Group of Brooklyn, New York, which is the best group in AA. And an old timer, once I heard him tell me, said, if you don't think that way about your group, stay in it till you get it right and don't go nowhere else and mess up any other group, you know? So it is an honor, and I am grateful to be here. Just what it was like, what happened, how it's like now, and how I even thought about principles at all connected with any type of personality. Grew up in Brooklyn, drank at a very young age. Education was a process that my family and my mother instilled in me, so I loved going to school. Sort of mixed up as a child because I grew up in Brownsville in Brooklyn, and Brownsville in Brooklyn was a very hard, rough neighborhood, But so my mother, because of her impact of education, and she had me in the church, so I became a kind of mixed up kid kind of early because I got drafted in the gangs. So if you can imagine, I was in the gangs. Mother had me playing piano lessons, and I also, started drinking, So it wasn't easy being a gang member and taking piano lessons at the same time, So I was totally confused, So when I took that drink, I was like, okay, that was like relaxing, man. It was crazy, So I went, and like I said, I enjoyed education. I did well in school, but always got caught up on what was going on in the school with the other fellas. Top in my class, and many times, I got A's, but almost got kicked out of high school in the last part of high school because I decided I was going to hang out with the guys outside, drink and use other substances, and they gave me a break, because it was crazy. We did crazy things. If you can imagine seeing this stage and the curtain in front of it, and we're in the auditorium. So alcohol told me that there was a teacher's pocketbook on that stage. And so I could move from behind the stage and get the pocketbook and get away. So you got a whole auditorium of people seeing this stage moving forward. And all of a sudden, and I'm snatching the pocketbook and run out. And I really thought I was going to get away, But it was insanity, those kinds of things the alcohol had me doing. I drank. I was one of those drunks that got the shakes. I came from the era where you had to go get the Librium, when you went to detox because I shook so bad, too. I couldn't even hold a cup of water, I got what they call the wineage, too. I don't know if anybody identified that. I drank so much wine till the alcohol started coming out of my pores. And it was real uncomfortable. I took a drink. Matter of fact, it got to the point where I had to throw up the first drink to keep the rest of them down, the hives and all the rest of that. And the drinking kept going on like that, on and on and on. I say that I use other substances because I was one of those, once you gave me a drink, everything else was game. It doesn't matter after that, compromised my values in terms of family. I remember being with my family. Also, in Coney Island, we had what we called duplex apartments in part of Brooklyn. And so we were going out one Mother's Day, and I was with my family going out the door, and I knew that I had put my money somewhere. I couldn't remember where I put my money. But what I did was I took a drink, and I cursed my whole family out. Went at the end and called them Epson, this and that, and in the middle of cursing them out, I remember where I put the money. So it's like, now I got to go upstairs and get the money. I'm taking a good drink now because when I come back down, I got to face them with this madness, And when I came back down, you know, they still went out with me. You know, I don't know how, but it was totally insane. But these were the type of things. So when you talk about principles before personalities and my family, you know, my kids wind up, some of them in recovery. Some of them have made it in and out, you know. I've made my amends, you know, so they know who I am today. I reach out to them, and I pray that they get here, you know. But they became thieves, and they started to drink, too, as a result of me passing out. They stole from me when I was drunk, you know. And so, you know, what I realized, though, as I kept coming, because I need to say up front that I'm one of those who relapsed a lot. I didn't come in here and use a sponsor like you said. I came in. I was so afraid to put down the drink, to be quite honest, that I actually carried a pint of wine with me in my bag to the meeting. I don't suggest anybody do that because that was the fear, you know. And I finally went to what they call at the time a sobering up station in Brooklyn. And sobering up station where they did give me medication, but they did tell you if you got sick enough and you went to the emergency room, they would take care of you. Now, I came in, got out that sobering station, and that's when my recovery began. I got a sponsor, got into the program, got into the steps, you know, and started doing a lot of service. Service really kind of made me see life from a whole different perspective, especially even in my home group, doing the coffee pot, coffee commitments, and becoming responsible, you know. And then eventually, because I became a GSR, you know, and so then we started doing the work in terms of how important it is for GSRs and what you represent to the connection of Alcoholics Anonymous. Going places and meeting people that you normally would not have met and getting into a new way of life and understanding the process of recovery from a perspective of how important it is that we do service to understand to keep our doors open. You know, and we know in service and meetings, we see a lot of personalities start to come out. Business meetings and all the rest. But God in his infinite wisdom at the end is always the ultimate authority. You know, and that's the beauty of this too. You know, my sponsor used to tell me we had to get into traditions that the steps were for me and traditions were for that, for to keep, to protect the group from me, you know. And as I got into them and I started to realize the beauty of it. And I'll say this because I wear two hats because I also work with people like us. So you know what that can be like, you know. And I just say, anybody who's a counselor, don't think that because you work in the field that will not keep you sober. I have to make meetings. I've seen some counselors sicker than the clients after a while if you don't do your work, you know. That's just me. The point I'm making that is because what happened is I saw the business part that started to mix with our fellowship. And what happened was we actually had a person who wanted to do a program and wanted to actually put us on TV and capitalize with the steps shown and all the rest. And it was like, and this was a person who had many years in recovery, had stopped making meetings, but had also now become an entrepreneur. I'm not here to knock or tell anybody how they should do their recovery. But I do know one thing, that was not something I was going to be a part of. You know, and I realized because, you know, we know even for our society to stay alive, you cannot owe anybody anything. The freedom from bondage or the freedom to be able to carry this message is important. You know, we don't need conditions. We see in our history, Oxford Group, Washingtonians, how it affect all of us, you know. I also saw at one time, I went to a church to start a meeting, and the church allowed us to start the meeting in there. And what happened was, on their Sunday bulletin, they started putting on the regular Sunday service, they had the 12 steps on the other side of the Sunday bulletin. And they started listing our names and said, wait a minute, we can't quite do it like that, you know what I'm saying? And then they started calling me up in front of the church on Sunday, this is Martin, he's going to help the alcoholics. And I was like, oh, wait a minute, no, you can't do this, you know? You know, and the only thing they didn't pick me up front and said, you know, you must be Bill W., you know, and like, no, come on, you know. What was really, really kind of strange, though, because the group, you know, when we called it the Noah's Ark group because it was right on Coney Island. So we went out there and we started the meeting, and they did ask me, was I Noah? I said, no, I ain't Noah, you know. But the thing was we couldn't hold the meetings on holidays like Christmas and New Year's. We know what Christmas and New Year's are to active alcoholics. Those are life-saving days, that days when we must be in the room. you know, for those of us who realize that we have a problem, you know. So in many areas that, you know, like I said, I got into service, I realized the importance that I had to put even in considerations in the group, that the group came first in terms of situations, in terms of what was best for AA as a whole. You know, we have situations where we start new meetings in our community, and we also always realize that we have to take into consideration what's going on with the other meetings. One meeting is affected because of the timeline. You don't want to take away from that other meeting, you know. And the difference between meetings and actual meetings, you have to be registered, at least it was suggested, you know, with our intergroup, you know, so that they'll know what's going on and the type of meetings are there. These are all things I learned by being in service that were real important to me and getting the newcomer involved, you know. I had an experience when you talk about really looking at what's the priority. I was at a big meeting last Sunday in Manhattan at the Marriott, and they had a guy there. One had one day and one had 57 years. And the guy who got the big book for the one day, at the end of every meeting, when everybody's down and everybody's going on, I happened to stay around, was going to go to the movies, and I ran into this guy. He was by himself. And he said, "Martin, I'm scared." And the first thing I thought about was myself being in early recovery. After the rah, the joy, and being alone my first day, and nobody's there but me, and the thoughts in my head, and wanting to take a drink with no numbers and nobody. So I said, "Well, let's have a cup of coffee, let's talk." You know, I stayed with him, and we talked. Come to find out, this guy had so much in common with me. You know, same age, I've been the same story and all the rest of that. He's been calling me every day since then. He's been calling me down here. I said, "I'm in Atlanta, what's that got to do? Call me." You know, it doesn't matter where I'm at. We're talking about call, to reach out, to reach back. How important it is of how God's grace. And like I said, it was no coincidence for me to stay around to meet you, because that's what they did for me. You give back, you know, unconditional love in this program. You know, only through God's grace and the blessings in this fellowship, you know. Therefore, the newcomer, they say, is the most important person, you know. So when I think about principles and personalities, you know, and it even talks about in our anonymity statement, you know, doing things without looking for stuff in return. You know, people don't always have to know, you know, I've done things and I see the joy. You know, reach out to newcomers and do something for them. They don't have to know who it is. It's not important that they know that they got it from me. You know, it's just important that you see the growth of the fellowship in the people's lives, you know. Taking folks through steps, you know, and getting into the program is real important. You know, I used to have sponsees that kept relapsing, you know, for some reason my ego told me it was me, you know. No, people get the program when it's time for them to get the program. And I also realized through God's grace, you know, I can only be there. You should tell me what you say. I can carry the message, but I can't carry the alcoholic. I'll never turn my back on you. You know, if I'm going to look down, it's to pick you up. No other reason. I thank God. You know, I've had the most unlikely people that I thought that would help me in my recovery help me in my life. You know, all walks of life, all backgrounds, you know, understanding. We got a meeting. If anybody's been to Living Now or some of the places in Brooklyn, in Manhattan, and there were meetings there where, you know, everything is going on inside, crazy as I don't know what at the same time. But people are struggling the way they act, the unconditional love that's there. You know, people that are homeless, people that are sleeping, just came in from town, no place to go, you know, but they want to recover. You know in my early recovery, I had to just keep making meetings. You know, I didn't know about getting a job. I didn't know about all these other things. All I want to do, how do I get past not picking up that first drink? Once I got past that, and for me, I had to establish a relationship with God and my understanding. Now, I grew up in the church. I need to say that my relationship with God was cultivated in here. You know, when I saw that it was really, really unconditional love in here. You know, I'm an elder in my church, and I must say that I love the church, and I love Christ and my understanding, but sometimes I don't always get the love in the church that I get in here, you know. That's my experience, you know what I mean? So, and the bottom line is that y'all understand, you know, I can't talk about, you know, drinking and how I used to snatch pocketbooks in church, you know, and all that, you know. You know what I mean? Okay. And I went on a church retreat one time, and I shared with the pastor that part of my story that I had robbed the tithes and I had, you know, stolen the money. And when they had the usher on the plate, I always had, I tipped in the till. He said, no, you can never tell the church that, you know. I said, but it was 20 years ago. He said, no, you can't tell them that, you know. So, but thank God for unconditional love that comes in here as a result of the work, these steps, our traditions, you know. It's so important how it's anonymity. I realized that. Because it allows people to know they can come into a safe place. I don't have to worry about coming in here and my anonymity will be broken because of what you say, you know, or what is said unconditionally, you know. Imagine, and I think that's one of the tools that Bill left with us, the importance of the spirit of anonymity, too, you know, important it is in terms of carrying the message, you know. It's been a good ride for these last 27 years, you know. A lot of ups and downs. Life shows up, you know. I stand here right now, you know, recovering from prostate cancer and liver cancer, you know. And through God's grace, I don't have a desire to drink. Y'all told me to join the No Matter What Club. No matter what. Because I'll just be drunk with cancer. That's it. You know, and you will not get treated, you know. So I'm eternally grateful for this opportunity. You know, I thank God and I thank the gift that he gave Bob and Bill and those who continue to carry a message for this wonderful, wonderful fellowship. You know, the joy of living, wow. You just look around here. This is an example of it right now. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you, Martin. Thank you. Tradition 5. Each Alcoholics Anonymous group ought to be a spiritual entity, having but one primary purpose: to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. Tradition 6. Problems of money, property, and authority may easily divert us from our primary spiritual aim. We think, therefore, that any considerable property of genuine use to AA should be separately incorporated and managed, thus dividing the material from the spiritual. An AA group as such ought never go into business. Secondary aids to AA, such as clubs or hospitals, which require much property or administration, ought to be incorporated and so set apart that, if necessary, they can be freely discarded by the groups. Hence, such facilities ought not to use the AA name. Their management should be the sole responsibility of those people who financially support them. For clubs, AA managers are usually preferred, but hospitals, as well as other places of recuperation, ought to be well outside AA and medically supervised. While an AA group may cooperate with anyone, such cooperation ought never go so far as affiliation or endorsement, actual or implied. An AA group can bind itself to no one. Tradition 7. The AA groups themselves ought to be fully supported by the voluntary contributions of their own members. We think that each group should soon achieve this ideal. Any public solicitation of funds using the name of Alcoholics Anonymous is highly dangerous. Then, too, we view with much concern those AA treasuries which continue beyond prudent reserve to accumulate funds for no stated AA purpose. Experience has often warned us that nothing can so surely destroy our spiritual heritage as futile disputes over property, money, and authority. Number 8, Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional. Our usual AA 12-step work is never to be paid for. Our next speaker this morning, from Orlando, Florida, Ann P.
Thank you, Ted. John, I'm sorry. My name.
That's an honor. Say that's an honor of Tyrone.
Oh, okay. I don't know what he said. I'm an alcoholic. My name is Ann. My sobriety date's January 8th, 1991, and for that I will forever be grateful. Thank you. My home group is the First Things First group of Alcoholics Anonymous in Orlando, Florida, and we meet 7 days a week at 7:30 a.m., and what a great way to start your day. And sometimes it just turns into an unabashed talk about nothing but God and love and the program, and it's just great. So I'm really grateful to my home group. I didn't start out there, and I wanted to start out by telling you my life today is just, it's wonderful, and I am so grateful that I didn't get everything I deserved, I didn't get the things that I thought were what I needed when I came in. I got what God gave me, and it was much more than I could ever have hoped for and ever wanted. And when I came in, I am so glad that we had this tradition to place principles before personalities, because I want to tell you, I did not look very attractive. I had short hair, even shorter than today's hair, and I'd recently been to the Bahamas, and I had it braided. You know how they ask, lady, can I braid your hair? I thought, well, that's a wonderful idea, and I had little braids all over my head. And I, people looked at me funny, and I didn't care much about putting makeup on. Why do that? Because, you know, when you drink, you don't get time to freshen up, so why just leave it off altogether? And I weighed about the same that I do now. But it was not this kind of weight. It was that alcoholic bloat, and I looked bad, and I looked like I was about ready to check in. My greatest fear in the world was that I was going to be sent to an insane asylum, and I'd had that fear since I was 4 years old. Now, I could not go to a treatment center with that kind of fear. So I got slung into Alcoholics Anonymous because I had a husband that was leaving me. No, he wasn't leaving me. He was kicking me out. And he was going to keep the kids. He told me that they didn't deserve a mother like me, and he was going to keep them. And, today I'm still married to that same man and very grateful that I am. And I always talk about him and the fact that he put up with the worst years of my drinking, and he also put up with the few years of when you're getting sober. You know, those years when you have the big mood swings and a lot of things going on and nothing is right. And you know, I always kind of compare it to being a 13-year-old boy in puberty when you're first getting sober. It's awful. So, but I did make it. I did get sober by the grace of God and the people in these rooms. And the people in these rooms taught me a lot of things about humility. They taught me how to be, and I was so blessed to get a sponsor. Her name was Ramona, and I want to talk about Ramona. She had been through just about everything that life can throw at you. I'm talking, just everything. And she just kind of took me by the hand and said, honey, are you ready? Are you entirely ready to get sober and stay sober and have sustainable sobriety for the rest of your life, one day at a time? And I said, I don't know how to do that. And she said, that's what we're here for. And the old timers used to tell us to put the plug in the jug. I haven't heard that expression in a long time, but I love that expression. Put the plug in the jug and leave it there. And then they used to tell us to take the cotton out of our ears and put it in our mouth and sit there and listen. And today I hear they have newcomer meetings where only the newcomers are supposed to talk. I'm sorry, I don't get it, but But I do see some of them getting sober and staying sober. But I'm sorry, that's just not, I don't get it. I find it a little strange, but that's okay. I am not the head of AA. Imagine that. I was getting ready to come out here, up here from Orlando, Florida, and I was reminded of when I was in San Antonio 5 years ago. And I was reminded coming back from San Antonio, where several of us from the Florida and the North Florida area and the specifically Central Florida, we're all coming back and we all know each other. And we're getting on the plane and it's all hugs and kisses and high fives and laugh. And we're just enjoying. We've just been at this international convention and we're just loving it because it's so much fun and we're having a great time. I got on the plane and my friends are all over here, and there was one seat left over here for me, but it was next to a couple, and I didn't know them. Well, guess what? They didn't know me, and they didn't know us. So, of course, they started asking, how do you all know each other? Everybody seems to know each other, not just here on the plane, but all through the airport. And I said, well, do you live in San Antonio? And he said, well, sort of on the outskirts. And I said, I think some town called Helotes.
Yeah.
And he said, he and his wife were coming to Central Florida to enjoy our attractions. And he said, what kind of group are you? And I said, well, you know, and I thought about it, and I thought, gosh, I could tell him, and I'm only breaking my anonymity, but if I tell him I'm breaking everybody's anonymity on that plane that I've said hello to. So I didn't know what to do. I said, well, we're a group that just have a lot of fun, and we like each other, and we love each other, and it's just a great group of people. And he kept on, and he said, well, you know what I thought you were. And I said, what did you think our group was? And he said, I thought you were all swingers. I assured him we weren't having that kind of fun. I think I did break everybody's anonymity after that. But you see, that if you're not an alcoholic and you see us out there having fun and loving each other, that just doesn't happen everywhere, does it? You know, we are a unique group of people. And, you know, the big book talks about we are people who normally would not mix. Yet here we are all together. And I see people meeting and greeting and just having the best time at these every 5 years, and I sort of wish they'd moved up to every year, but I'm not sure I could afford it, but I'd be there as often as I could. It's great. You know, I also came into Alcoholics Anonymous. I was one of those people with the big ego and low self-esteem. And you know, my big ego was the kind that if I go to the bank and I make a deposit and then a week and a half, 2 weeks later, I go back, I expect the teller to remember who I am. I don't know why. I mean, maybe she's only seen 1,000 people since then, but she's supposed to remember me. And that didn't happen. And then I come in here and I ask, you know, they used to close meetings with, and anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. And I kept wondering what that was. So I asked Ramona, what's that? And she said, when you get a little humility, you'll start understanding. So I started asking, what is humility and how do I get that? And the woman told me it's when I start caring about others more than I care about myself. And you know, in Alcoholics Anonymous, when that newcomer comes in, we don't really know who they are or what they are or where they've been, except that they open their mouths and they say, I'm an alcoholic. We don't care what color they are. We don't care what their religious affiliation is. We don't care who they love or where they love. We care that they open their mouths and they say, I am an alcoholic. And that means we get to work with a newcomer. That means we get to be at our best. That's when we're at our best. I've been in a lot of service work through the years, and the reason I got into service work was at 5 years of sobriety, I was just real happy being a, you know, just a regular old member of Alcoholics Anonymous. But then this friend of mine walked up to me and he saw my name on the board. We had a blackboard that we used to put all the birth dates on, and he had seen my name on the board and I was coming up on 5 years. And there were a whole bunch of 1 years, fewer 2 years, fewer 3 years, and fewer 4 years, and then a few 5 years. But after 5 years, that number dropped significantly. And I asked him, and he said, do you know how you get to be sober longer than 5 years? And I said, don't drink. Go to meetings. And he said, well, yeah, but beyond that. And he told me it was service. And, you know, he didn't put it in a way that I felt threatened or that I needed to go out and save the world. But he put it in a way that said, to save your life, you'll start doing some service work. And it did save my life, and I did get involved. And I tell young people and young, new in sobriety, when I say young people, I mean newbies. I like newbies. And I tell them, just jump in with both feet. You got to have both feet in this room. You got to be in this program with all you have, with all your heart. And you know, if you're not, then there's too many things. We have a disease that tells us we don't have a disease. We have a disease that lies to us and tells us, you know, that we're okay when we're not okay. We have a disease that kills us. And, you know, I'm just glad that today, and I'm so grateful that we didn't have to die and that we get to have fun and we have fun with each other and we get to do things together. I am so grateful I have a son that's here with me this weekend. And, you know, when I first got sober, I was about 4 months sober when I found out that Paul has a problem too. And I didn't know what to do, and I took it to the rooms. And one time after hearing enough of that, a long-timer came up to me and said, you know, young lady, you're going to have to recognize the fact that either God is or he isn't. And that same God that got you sober is the same God that will get your son sober. But it's going to be in God's time, and it's going to be when he's ready. And so I prayed for 16 years. And my son has over 6 years of sobriety. Thank you, God. Thank you for that. Thank you, Alcoholics Anonymous, for that. Thank you. Yeah, I have to tell you, I was not nervous about standing up here until John told me that there was a mouse underneath that keeps sticking his head out underneath. And suddenly I keep thinking, is he looking out? Is he looking up? Is he under there? And I'm frightened. But it's the mouse. It's not you. He was lying to me. Well, how do we know an alcoholic's lying? Yeah, you all know. Okay. I just want to... Am I really short? Okay. I just want to tell you all that... You know, they say that the first 100 years of an organization like ours is what tells whether it's going to last or not. And we're at our 80th year. Is that amazing? You know, we got 20 more years and then they'll start really believing us. That is so amazing. Okay, I am going to, I like to read the long form of the 12th tradition because it says so much, it says a lot to me. So if you'll just, okay. And finally, we of Alcoholics Anonymous believe that the principle of anonymity has immense spiritual significance. It reminds us that we are to place principles before personalities, that we are actually to practice a genuine humility. This to the end that our great blessings may never spoil us, that we shall forever live in thankful contemplation of Him who presides over us all. I just, there are some groups that use that to close their meetings with, and I love it. I've always liked that from the first time. I'd never read the long form of the traditions until I went to this one group, and they were doing a tradition night, and they read that long form. And I said, wow, it says that? So, we are so blessed to be here. I feel extremely blessed to be here. I'm grateful that they invited me to do this. I'm grateful that you all came out to hear me. And let's just keep loving each other. Let's keep helping each other. I firmly believe that when God created us all, that He put us here, yes, to praise Him. But I think mostly He put us here to help each other. And that's what we do in AA. Thank you.
Thank you, Ann. What I was trying to tell you there is I think you called me Tom in honor of my friend Tyrone over here from my home group who continually calls us all by the wrong name. I told you I was going to say that, didn't I?
I'm so embarrassed.
Why? Tradition 9. Each AA group needs the least possible organization. Rotating leadership is the best. The small group may elect a secretary, the large group, its rotating committee, and groups of a large metropolitan area, their central or intergroup committee, which often employs a full-time secretary. The trustees of the General Service Board are, in effect, our AA General Service Committee. They are the custodians of our AA tradition and the receivers of voluntary AA contributions by which we maintain our AA General Service Office at New York. They are authorized by the groups to handle our overall public relations, and they guarantee the integrity of our principal newspaper, the AA Grapevine. All such representatives are to be guided in the spirit of service, for true leaders in AA are but trusted and experienced servants of the whole. They derive no real authority from their titles. They do not govern. Universal respect is the key to their usefulness. Number 10, no AA group or member should ever, in such a way as to implicate AA, express any opinion on outside controversial issues, particularly those of politics, alcohol reform, or sectarian religion. The Alcoholics Anonymous groups oppose no one. Concerning such matters, they can express no views whatever. Number 11, our relations with the general public should be characterized by personal anonymity. We think AA ought to avoid sensational advertising. Our names and pictures as AA members ought not be broadcast, filmed, or publicly printed. Our public relations should be guided by the principle of attraction rather than promotion. There is never need to praise ourselves. We feel it better to let our friends recommend us. And finally, we of Alcoholics Anonymous believe that the principle of anonymity has an immense spiritual significance. It reminds us that we are to place principles before personalities, that we are actually to practice a genuine humility. This to the end that our great blessings may never spoil us, that we shall forever live in thankful contemplation of Him who presides over us all. Our next speaker from just up the Rio Grande River from El Paso, Texas, in Elephant Butte, New Mexico, is Terry E.
Thank you, Tom.
You're welcome, Bill. Thanks, Bill.
That's good. I deserve that.
My name is Terry. I know I don't look like one, but I'm an alcoholic. It's so good to be here today. It's always an honor and a privilege to be asked to participate in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'd like to thank the committee and Eva for doing this. This came about as a brief trip to General Service over the New Year's holiday, and my sweetheart Robin happens to be a very personal friend of Eva's, and so we wanted to stop and chat with her and, of course, talk about the convention, and wouldn't you know it, about 3 months later we get these letters in the mail, so here we are. In addition to having a honest desire to stop drinking, I'm old school, I have a few other things that make me a member in good standing of Alcoholics Anonymous. I have a sponsor. His name is George. He's sober 14 days less than me. I never let him forget that. He's also 18 days older than I am, and I never let him forget that. I have a home group. It's the Via Con Dios group in Truth of Consequences, New Mexico. It meets on Wednesdays and Saturdays. And in deference to Marty, it's at least the second best group in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I have a sobriety date, and that's the 25th day of September, 1970. And for that, I am truly grateful. I particularly want to thank Eva and the committee for getting me back into the literature and the books of Alcoholics Anonymous. One of the nice things about being asked to speak on something other than an AA story, given a particular topic, it puts me back into the literature, and I'm grateful for that. And so tonight, or this afternoon, rather, I'm going to probably be talking about this book here because there was a lot of good stuff in here, stuff that wasn't in here when I read it the first time. So principles before personalities. Happy, joyous, and free. Bill had a real penchant for three-word phrases. And I love him. I love his writing. And I can relate a lot to some of the things that he wrote, and particularly these three-word phrases. I liken it to when I was drinking, and I was early on in my drinking, I began to be restless, irritable, and discontent. And then it wasn't long after that that I began to feel pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. And eventually found Alcoholics Anonymous, and after a period of time, learned how to be happy, joyous, and free. And if I could stay sober just a little bit longer, I might get to be cunning, baffling, and powerful. My sponsor and my sweetheart say that the chances of that happening are slim to none. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous in June of 1962 as a direct result of a suicide attempt, unsuccessful. We talk a lot about suicide in Alcoholics Anonymous. It's all through our literature and our books. And so I was no stranger to the death wish. And I was living in New Jersey at the time. I was a young man. I was 23. I'd reached the end of my rope. And even though I was in New Jersey, I did not have a gun. And so after careful consideration, I decided that the best way for me to end my life was to gas myself to death in the oven. I went about the house and I gathered up some reading material. There was a little light in the oven. I gathered up some drinking material. There was half a bottle of vermouth left. That's all that was left. I went into the kitchen, I opened the oven door, I got down on my hands and knees in front of the oven, I reached up, I turned on the big knob in the center. You have to understand, I was not the cook in our family. So I was not conversant with oven usage, but I knew this. Big knob in the center, turns on the oven. What I didn't know was there was a pilot light on the oven. And it lit, and now it's getting up to 450 degrees, and I'm thinking, well, Jesus, I don't want to roast to death. And so I reached up and I turned off the big knob in the center, thankfully, leaned down on the oven door, and the oven fell over on me. And I could not get it off. I may have this with me. I don't know. I carry this with me wherever I go when speaking at a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. Many years ago, I bought a new home, and in the new home were a bunch of new appliances. And in the oven was this pamphlet. Now, I know you can't all see this pamphlet, so I'm going to describe it to you. On the cover is a picture of an oven with the door open and a little guy in front of it with a circle around it and a line through it. And what it says in here is, what to do to your oven to keep it from tipping over. And I thought to myself, if they'd have had this pamphlet in 1950 or 62, you'd have had a different speaker here today. There was a subsequent knock at the door. It was the police. I had called them, too, at some point during the evening. They wanted to come by and see how things were going. I couldn't answer the door. I was under the oven. And so they left with a vague threat to come back at some future date. I spent the night under the oven. Next morning, I got up. I walked into the living room. I looked in the kitchen, looked in the mirror, rather. I was a lovely shade of yellow. I see some yellow shirts in here, about the color of that one right there. And I thought to myself, you know, yellow is not a good color for you. And I offered up at that moment the alcoholic's prayer. God help me. And he did, right away. The next thing I did was pick up an old newspaper that had been laying in the corner of my living room for a few weeks, open it up and turn immediately to an article on alcoholism. In that newspaper, it gave the number central office. I called him. A gal answered the phone. My first exposure to the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous. A gal that was doing service at 9 o'clock in the morning. Alcoholics Anonymous, she says. I said, I'd like to get some information about Alcoholics Anonymous. She says, what's your name? Well, hell, I'm not going to tell her my name. Calling Alcoholics Anonymous. She managed to get that out of me. Where do you live? I'm not going to tell her where I live. Alcoholics will have to come to my house. I even gave her my phone number. Someone will be in touch with you, she said. Well, I wasn't happy about that. Here I'm trying to do something about my drinking problem. I'm getting someone will be in touch with you. So I hang up the phone. Now I'm wondering whatever happened to that bottle of sweet vermouth. And it wasn't 5 minutes later the phone rings. You know when the phone rings in an alcoholic's home, that is not a joyous event. I didn't want to answer the phone, but there was no one else there but me. She was gone. And so I answered the phone. It was a guy by the name of Eddie from Alcoholics Anonymous, practicing the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous. He was making a 12-step call. We chatted on the phone for a little bit. I want to come to see you, he said. All right. Would you like to make an appointment? No, he said, I'm not far from where you live. He has my address. Big mistake there. I'll be there in 10 minutes. Okay, so now I really wonder what happened to the bottle of vermouth, and I'm looking out the window, and I'm really nervous because I'm waiting for the A truck to show up. The one with the sign on it that says Alcoholics Anonymous, and on the other side it says, we are going to Terry's house. Another principle of Alcoholics Anonymous. No signs. No tracts. Eddie comes up to my house. We sit down. We talk for a while. He tells me about his problem with alcohol. And all the time I'm thinking, what about me? Because that's all I ever thought about. And finally, when we're finished, he said, listen, I need to ask you three questions. I love these three questions. I don't get a chance to ask them very much anymore. We live in a very small community. Question number one, do you think you might have a problem with alcohol? Well, I allowed as that was possible that I might have a very small problem with alcohol. He took that as a yes. Would you like to do something about that? Well, perhaps. I might be willing to do something about it. He took that as a yes. The third question, the one I really liked, because he just hunkered right down and he looked me right in the eye and he said, when? Well, Jesus, not now. I'm busy. He could tell from the look of me that I was a busy man. He said so. I'm coming to your house tonight at 7 o'clock to take you to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. Another principle. Okay, well, I allowed us how I'd go. He left. Now I have to go see the alcoholics. I have to get ready. I have no clean clothes. No, going nowhere near the washer or dryer. I'm not having a lot of luck with appliances at this stage of my life. I get something out of the hamper, a little wet wash rag, clean it up, splash my face, literally with Aqua Bella. Why I didn't drink that, I don't know. 7 o'clock on the dot. Here's Eddie. Punctuality. Commitment. I get down, I get in his car. It's a brand new Mercury. Mercury was a great car back then. It has that beautiful new car smell. And I said, Eddie, I said, boy, this is a nice car. And he says, yeah. He says, you know what? AA got me this car. Jesus, maybe they'll get me one too. So we go to the meeting. It's in Ridgewood, New Jersey, a very affluent community. I don't know if there's anybody here from New Jersey, but we ran into some people. All right, yeah. Very affluent community. Lincolns and Cadillacs in the parking lot. Those were the big cars back then. We go into the meeting. The men are wearing suits and ties. It's not in a basement. It's in a church parlor. There's upholstered furniture. The women are wearing silk dresses, big diamond rings, mink coats. They're drinking coffee out of china cups and saucers. I turned to Eddie. I said, what time do the alcoholics get here? He said, you're looking at them. I said, how do you know which ones are the alcoholics? You can figure that out, he said. I did, by the way, later on. This is such a big meeting. Go to these really big meetings. There's big meetings all around the country. They're out in L.A., the Pacific Group, places like that. Go to a big meeting sometime. Look around the room. Pick the people that look really, really bad. They're the spouses of the newcomers. The meeting was different than the typical AA meeting. They had a speaker for about 20 minutes, and then there was a question and answer time. The question and answer time, people would raise questions from the audience, the speaker would answer them, and then people in the audience will participate. So I had a wealth of knowledge. The first question, I raised my hand to participate, and because I wanted to be a personality. And Eddie, who was sitting next to me, reached over and he pulled my arm down very gently. We'll get to you in a minute. But the next question was right down my alley. And so I raised my hand and I'm waving it back and forth a little. And he reaches over and pulls my arm down a little more forcefully. You just sit there. We'll get to you. The third question, I got the goods on him out of my chair waving my arms. He reaches up, he grabs me by the back of the shirt, he slams me down to the seat, he says, just sit down and shut up. I don't think we say that enough in Alcoholics Anonymous. I wanted to be a personality. It wasn't long after. I identified myself as an alcoholic. And after the meeting, I went up to the guy who looked to me to be important. After I identified myself as an alcoholic, I wanted to be a good member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I wanted to be a great member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I wanted to be the best member of Alcoholics. I wanted to be a premier member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I wanted to be the president of Alcoholics Anonymous. I had a plan. That guy looked like the president of Alcoholics Anonymous, and so I went to him and I said, is there anything I can do to help? Because I figure they're going to make me the vice president of Alcoholics Anonymous. Another principal came into play. Yeah, he looks at me and says, yeah, he says, you can help. I'm excited. After the meeting, he says, I would like you to go around and pick up all the metal ashtrays. Do not touch any of the glass ashtrays. I want to be the president of Alcoholics Anonymous. I can't even pick up the glass ashtrays. So I'm washing the metal ashtrays. I'm putting them away. They're come back 3 weeks later, they are the cleanest metal ashtrays in all of New Jersey. I got them numbered and stacked. Don't touch those metal ashtrays. Those are mine. And then they let me pick up the glass ashtrays. And then they introduced me to the mop. And I am working my way up the ladder of success in Alcoholics Anonymous. My first exposure to what I consider to be the most important principle in our program, and they're all important, but I consider this one to be the most important for me, and that's service. I mean, everyone here has talked about service. And so I began to get into service in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I began to learn what Alcoholics Anonymous was all about. John read the long form of the traditions, and it reminded me of an incident I had with the seventh tradition. It wasn't long after my early days in sobriety in New Jersey. I became affiliated with another very affluent group in southern New Jersey. And after a brief period of time, they made me the treasurer. I didn't steal the money. I was tempted. But I had heard that group treasuries should not have a lot of money. We had $850. I bought $850 worth of literature. They fired me. They said I was taking that tradition too literally. I said I was going to talk about the book, A Comes of Age. There's some really good stuff in here regarding the traditions. It starts on page 5, and one of our early trustees, Bernard Smith, talks about the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous. And what he says is that he tells not only what AA means to alcoholics and to the world at large, but also what AA principles as practiced in his own life meant to him. So this is not exclusive to us, although at times I would like to think it was, but it's not exclusive to us. These principles have been around for a long, long time, and we've just adopted some of them. On page 138 are the AA principles of service. And I'll just take a moment to read them. There's only a few. Each AA group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. Every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting. Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional. AA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. Our leaders are but trusted servants, they do not govern. We try to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Someone told me one time when I was new in Alcoholics Anonymous, not too new, but fairly new, if you're at a meeting and a newcomer shows up, sit next to him. Talk to him. Give them your phone number. Don't worry, they won't call you. In reading this book, it also reminded me of the Oxford group and the four absolutes: absolute honesty, absolute purity, absolute unselfishness, and absolute love. It also reminded me of our program initially when we only had 6 steps. Chunks of truth, Bill called them. Chunks of truth. I like that. It also talks in here about the naming of our book, Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm sure a lot of you know the story about the naming of our book. The majority of the sentiment was to call it The Way Out, which it is. And then they decided to do some research, so one of our members went down to the Library of Congress in Washington, D.C., and found out that there were 12 other books entitled The Way Out, and we didn't want to be the 13th Way Out, and so we looked for another answer. And there was another answer. Bill had one. He wanted to call it the BW Movement. He was talked out of that rather quickly. And then further on in here, there's a particular paragraph that I found interesting. And it's from an address that Bill gave at 4 in the afternoon in St. Louis in 1955. And it's fairly lengthy, but I want to read it to you because it really struck me. Some of us may think that structurally speaking we are quite unique, but this is not entirely so. Our principles of recovery are borrowed from the Oxford group in part. And so are most of our structural ideas. In AA, we can see many of the means by which men and women over the centuries have tried to unite themselves, and each of these techniques of association has its assets and liabilities. When we first come into AA, we find here is squiggly writing, as we observed before, a greater personal freedom than any other society knows. We cannot be compelled, squiggly writing, to do anything. In that sense, this society is a benign anarchy. I love that term, benign anarchy. I used to tell my kids that in our family, we were a benign dictatorship. The word anarchy has a bad meaning to most of us, probably because one of its excitable adherents long ago threw bombs around in Chicago, Robin. But I think that the gentle Russian prince who so strongly advocated the idea felt that if men were granted absolute liberty and were compelled to obey no one in person, they would then voluntarily associate themselves in a common interest. Alcoholics Anonymous is an association of the benign sort the prince envisioned. What a lovely society we are. I have some concerns about our society. For the last 10 or 15 years, it's been my recollection that we continue to quote a membership of 2 million members. There's been no growth. And yet I look around this convention yesterday and today, and I say to myself, how can there not be growth? How can there not be progress in Alcoholics Anonymous when we have such a warm and loving membership? If there is no growth, if Alcoholics Anonymous is boiling down, it's just like a good soup. It's boiling down to the best stuff. And I see the best stuff here as I walk around the convention and listen to people talk and watch them hug one another and renew old acquaintances. I wanted to close with a quote from Father Ed Dowling. AA is good. Come and get it. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. Just please, next time, tell us what you really think, all right? Once again, welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. Still, you may say, but I will not have the benefit of contact with you who write this book. We cannot be sure. God will determine that. So you must remember that your real reliance is always upon Him. He will show you how to create the fellowship you crave. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask Him in your morning meditation what you can do each day, man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with Him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit. And you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. Thank you.